Audible Inc. and Harlequin present Magic Study by Maria V. Snyder. Read by Gabra Zachman.
Chapter 1.
We're here, Iris said.
I looked around. The surrounding jungle bulged with life. Overgrown green bushes blocked our path, vines hung from the tree canopy, and the constant chatter and trill of jungle birds beat at my ears. Small furry creatures, who had been following us through the jungle, peeked at us from their hiding spots behind huge leaves. Where? I asked, glancing at the three other girls. They shrugged in unison, equally confused. In the thick, humid air, their thin cotton dresses were soaked in sweat. My own black pants and white shirt clung to my clammy skin. We were tired from lugging our heavy backpacks along snake-thin jungle paths, and itchy from hosting unnameable insects on our skins.
The Zoltana homestead, Iris said. Quite possibly, your home.
I surveyed the lush greenery and saw nothing that resembled a settlement. During the course of our travel south, whenever Iris had declared that we had arrived, we were usually in the midst of a small town or village, with houses made of wood, stone, or brick, hemmed in by fields and farms. The brightly dressed inhabitants would welcome us, feed us, and, amid a cacophony of voices and spicy aromas, listen to our story. Then certain families would be summoned with great haste. In a whirlwind of excitement and babble, one of the children in our party, who had lived in the orphanage in the north, would be reunited with a family they hadn't known existed. As a result, our group had grown ever smaller as we'd traveled farther into the southern land of Citia. Soon we had left the cold northern air far behind, and were now cooking in the steamy warmth of the jungle with no sign of a town in sight. Homestead? I asked. Iris sighed. Wisps of her black hair had sprung from her tight bun, and her stern expression didn't quite match the slight humor in her emerald eyes.
Yelena, appearances can be deceiving. Seek with your mind, not your senses, she instructed.
I rubbed my slick hands along the grain of my wooden staff, concentrating on its smooth surface. My mind emptied, and the buzz of the jungle faded as I sent out my mental awareness. In my mind's eye, I slithered through the underbrush with a snake, searching for a patch of sunlight. I scrambled through the tree branches with a long-limbed animal with such ease that it felt as if we flew. Then, above, I moved with people among the treetops. Their minds were open and relaxed, deciding what to eat for dinner and discussing the news from the city. But one mind worried about the sounds from the jungle below. Something wasn't right. Someone strange was there. Possible danger. Who's in my mind? I snapped back to myself. Iris stared at me. They live in the trees? I asked. She nodded.
But remember, Yelena, just because someone's mind is receptive to your probing doesn't mean you're permitted to dive into their deeper thoughts. That's a breach of our ethical code.
Her words were harsh, the master-level magician scolding her student. Sorry, I said. She shook her head.
I forget that you're still learning. We need to get to the Citadel and begin your training, but I'm afraid this stop will take some time.
Why?
I can't leave you with your family like I did for the other children, and it would be cruel to take you away too soon.
Just then, a loud voice from above called out, Veneta den! Iris swung her arm up and mumbled something, but my muscles froze before I could repel the magic that engulfed us. I couldn't move. After a frantic moment of panic, I calmed my mind. I tried to build a mental wall of defense, but the magic that ensnared me knocked down my mental bricks as fast as I could stack them. Iris, however, was unaffected. She yelled into the treetops,
We're friends of the Zoltanas! I'm Iris of the Jewel Rose Clan, fourth magician in the council.
Another strange word echoed from the trees.
My legs trembled as the magic released me, and I sank to the ground to wait for the faintness to pass.
The twins, Grasina and Nikili, collapsed together, moaning.
May rubbed her legs.
"Why have you come, Iris Jewel Rose?"
the voice above asked.
"I believe I may have found your lost daughter,"
she replied. A rope ladder descended through the branches.
"Let's go, girls," Iris said. "Here, Yelena, hold the bottom while we climb."
A peevish thought about who would hold the ladder for me flashed through my mind. Iris's annoyed voice admonished me in my own head.
"Yelena, you will have no trouble getting into the trees. Perhaps I should have them raise the ladder when it's your turn to climb, as you might prefer to use your grapple and rope."
She was right, of course. I had used the trees to hide from my enemies in Ixia without the convenience of a ladder. And even now, I'd enjoyed an occasional walk through the treetops to keep my skills honed.
Iris smiled at me. "Perhaps it's in your blood."
My stomach filled with unease as I remembered Mogken.
He had said I was cursed with Zoltana blood. I'd no reason to trust the now-dead southern magician, though, and I'd been avoiding asking Iris questions about the Zoltanas so I wouldn't get my hopes up about being a part of their family. Even while dying, I knew Mogken would have been capable of pulling one last spiteful trick. Mogken and General Brazel's son, Rayad, had kidnapped me along with over 30 other children from Citya. Averaging 2 children a year, they had brought the girls and boys north to Brazel's orphanage in the territory of Ixia for use in their twisted plans. All of the children had the potential of becoming magicians because they had been born to families with strong magic. Iris had explained to me that magical powers were a gift, and only a handful of magicians came from each clan.
"Of course, the more magicians in a family," Iris had said, "the greater chance of having more in the next generation. Mogken took a risk kidnapping children so young. Magical powers don't manifest until a child reaches maturity."
"Why were there more girls than boys?" I had asked.
"Only 30% of our magicians are males, and Bane Bloodgood is the only one to achieve master-level status."
As I steadied the rope ladder that hung from the jungle's canopy, I now wondered how many Zoltanas were magicians.
Beside me, the 3 girls tucked the hems of their dresses into their belts. Iris helped May start up the rope rungs, and then Grasina and Nikili followed. When we had crossed the border into Citya, the girls hadn't hesitated to exchange their northern uniforms for the bright, multicolored cotton dresses worn by some of the southern women.
The boys switched their uniforms for simple cotton pants and tunics.
I, on the other hand, had kept my food taster's uniform on until the heat and humidity had driven me to purchase a pair of boys' cotton pants and a shirt.
After Iris disappeared into the green canopy, I set my boot on the bottom rung. My feet felt as if they were swollen with water, weighing me down.
Reluctance clung to my legs as I dragged them up the ladder. In midair, I paused. What if these people didn't want me?
What if they didn't believe I was their lost daughter?
What if I were too old to be bothered with?
All the children who had already found their homes had been immediately accepted. Between the ages of 7 and 13, they had been separated from their families for only a few years. Physical resemblances, ages, and even names had made it easy to place them. Now we were down to 4. The identical twins, Grasina and Nikili, were 13. May was the youngest at 12, and I was the oldest of the group at 20. According to Iris, the Zoltanas had lost a 6-year-old girl over 14 years prior. That was a long time to be away. I was no longer a child. Yet I was the oldest one who had survived Brazel's plans and remained whole. When the other kidnapped children reached maturity, those who had developed magical powers had been tortured until they surrendered their souls to Mogken and Rayad. Mogken had then used the magic of these now mindless captives to enhance his own, making the children nothing more than living bodies without souls. Iris bore the burden of informing the families of these children,
but I felt some guilt by being the only one to survive Mogkin's efforts to capture my soul. The effort, though, cost me a great deal.
Thinking about my struggles in Ixia led to thoughts of Valak.
An ache for him chewed at my heart. Hooking an arm around the ladder, I fingered the butterfly pendant he had carved for me. Perhaps I could devise a way to return to Ixia. After all, the magic in my body no longer flared out of control, and I would much rather be with him than among these strange southerners who lived in the trees.
Even the name of the south, Citia, felt thick as rancid syrup in my mouth.
Yelena, come on, Iris called down to me. We're waiting.
I swallowed hard and ran a hand over my long braid, smoothing my black hair and pulling out the few viney tendrils that clung to it. Despite the long trek through the jungle, I wasn't too tired.
While shorter than most Ixians at 5'4", my body had transformed from emaciated to muscular during my last year in Ixia. The difference had been in my living arrangements.
From starving in the dungeon to tasting food for Commander Ambrose, my situation had improved for my physical well-being, but I couldn't say the same for my mental well-being during that time.
I shook my head, banishing those thoughts and concentrating on my immediate circumstances.
Climbing up the rest of the ladder, I expected it to end at a wide branch or a platform in the tree like a landing on a staircase. Instead, I entered a room. I looked around in amazement. The walls and ceiling of the room were formed by branches and limbs that had been roped together.
Sunlight leaked in between the gaps.
Bundled sticks had been worked into chairs that had cushions made of leaves. The small room held only 4 seats.
Is this her? A tall man asked Iris.
His cotton tunic and short pants were the color of the tree's leaves. Green gel had been combed into his hair and smeared over all his exposed skin. A bow and a quiver of arrows hung over his shoulder.
I guessed he was the guard.
Why, though, would he need a weapon if he were the magician who had frozen us?
Then again, Iris had deflected that spell with ease.
Could she turn aside an arrow as well?
Yes, Iris said to the man.
We've heard rumors at the market, and wondered if you would pay us a visit, fourth magician. Please, stay here, he said. I'll get the elder.
Iris sank into one of the chairs, and the girls explored the room, exclaiming over the view from the single window.
I paced the narrow space.
The guard seemed to disappear through the wall, but upon investigation, I discovered a gap that led to a bridge also made of branches.
Sit down, Iris said to me. Relax. You're safe here.
Even with that heartwarming reception, I countered.
Standard procedure. Unaccompanied visitors are extremely rare. With the constant danger of jungle predators, most travelers hire a Zoltana guide. You've been edgy and defensive ever since I told you we were headed to the Zoltana's village.
Iris pointed at my legs.
You're in a fighting stance, prepared for attack. These people are your family. Why would they want to hurt you?
I realized that I had pulled my weapon off my back and was clutching it in the ready position.
With effort, I relaxed my posture. Sorry.
I threaded the bow, a 5-foot wooden staff, back into its holder on the side of my backpack. Fear of the unknown had caused me to clench.
For as long as I could remember in Ixia, I had been told my family was dead, lost to me forever.
Even so, I used to dream of finding an adopted family who would love and care for me. I had only given up that fantasy when I had been turned into Mogkin and Rayad's experiment. And now that I had Valak, I felt I didn't need a family.
That's not true, Yelena, Iris said aloud. Your family will help you discover who you are and why. You need them more than you know.
I thought you said it was against your ethical code to read someone's mind. I rankled at her intrusion on my private thoughts.
We are linked as teacher and student. You freely gave me a pathway to your mind by accepting me as your mentor. It would be easier to divert a waterfall than to break our link.
I don't remember creating a pathway, I grumbled.
If there was a conscious effort in making a link, it wouldn't have happened.
She watched my face for a while.
You gave me your trust,
and your loyalty. That was all that was needed to forge a bond. While I won't pry into your intimate thoughts and memories, I can pick up on your surface emotions.
I opened my mouth to reply, but the green-haired guard returned.
Follow me, he said.
We wound our way through the treetops. Hallways and bridges connected room after room high above the land. There had been no hint of this maze of dwellings from the ground. We didn't see or meet a soul as we passed around bedrooms and through living areas. From glimpses into the rooms, I saw they were decorated with items found in the jungle. Coconut shells, nuts, berries, grasses, twigs, and leaves were all artfully arranged into wall hangings, book covers, boxes, and statues. Someone had even fashioned an exact replica of one of those long-tailed animals by using white and black stones glued together.
Iris, I said, pointing to the statue, what are those animals?
Valmers. Very intelligent and playful. There are millions of them in the jungle. They're curious, too. Remember how they spied on us from the trees?
I nodded, recalling the little creatures that never stood still long enough for me to study. In other rooms, I spotted more animal replicas made from different colored stones. A hollowness touched my throat as I thought of Valak and the animals he carved out of rocks. I knew he would appreciate the craftsmanship of these stone statues. Perhaps I could send one to him. I didn't know when I'd ever be able to see him again. The commander had exiled me to Cydia when he had discovered I possessed magical powers. If I returned to Ixia, the commander's order of execution would be in effect, but he had never said I couldn't communicate with my friends in Ixia. I soon found out why we hadn't encountered anyone on our journey through the village. We entered a large, round common room where about 200 people gathered. It appeared the entire settlement was here. People filled the benches of carved wood that circled a huge fire pit made of stone. Talk ceased the minute we entered. All eyes focused on me. My skin crawled. I felt as if they were examining every inch of my face, my clothes, and my muddy boots. From their expressions, I gathered I wasn't meeting expectations. I stifled the desire to hide behind Iris. Regret that I hadn't asked Iris more questions about the Zoltanas thumped in my chest. At last, an older man stepped forward.
I'm Bavol Kakao Zoltana, elder councilman for the Zoltana family. Are you Yelena Liana Zoltana?
I hesitated. That name sounded so formal, so connected, so foreign. My name is Yelena, I said. A young man a few years older than I pushed through the crowd. He stopped next to the elder. Squinting hard, his jade-eyed gaze bore into mine. A mixture of hatred and revulsion creased his face. I felt a slight touch of magic brush my body.
She has killed, he called out. She reeks of blood.
Chapter 2. A collective gasp sounded from the crowd of Zoltanas. Abhorrence and outrage gripped the now hostile faces in the room. I found myself behind Iris, hoping to block the negative force emanating from so many eyes.
Leaf, you always tend toward the dramatic, Iris admonished the young man. Yelena's had a hard life. Don't judge what you don't know.
Leaf wilted before Iris's gaze.
I reek of blood, too. Do I not? She asked.
But you're the fourth magician, Leaf said.
So you know what I've done and why. I suggest you find out what your sister has had to deal with in Ixia before you accuse her.
His jaw tightened. The muscles on his neck pulled taut as he swallowed what might have been a reply. I risked another peek around the room. Now contemplative, worried, and even sheepish looks peppered the group. The Zoltana women wore sleeveless dresses or skirts and short-sleeved blouses with bright flora patterns on them. The hemlines reached to their knees. The men of the clan wore light-colored tunics and plain pants. All the Zoltanas were barefoot, and most had lean builds and bronze skin. Then Iris's words sank in. I grabbed her arm.
Brother? I have a brother?
One side of her mouth quirked up.
Yes,
a brother, your only sibling. You would have known this if you hadn't changed the subject every time I tried to tell you about the Zoltanas.
Great. My luck was holding steady. I had thought my troubles were over when I had left the territory of Ixia. Why should any of this surprise me? While all the other Sishans lived in villages on the ground, my family resided in the trees. I studied Leif, searching for a resemblance. His stocky, muscular build and square face stood out compared to the rest of the Lithe clan. Only his black hair and green eyes matched my own features. During the awkward moments that followed, I wished for an invisibility spell, and reminded myself to ask Iris if there were such a spell. An older woman about my height approached us. As she neared, she shot Leif a powerful glance, and he hung his head. Without warning, she embraced me. I flinched for a heartbeat, uncertain. Her hair smelled like lilacs. "I've wanted to do this for 14 years, she said, hugging me tighter. "How my arms have ached for my little girl." Those words transported me back in time, shrunk me down into a 6-year-old child. Wrapping my arms around this woman, I bawled. 14 years without a mother had made me believe I could be stoic when I finally met her. During the journey south, I had imagined I would be curious and unemotional. "Nice to make your acquaintance, but we really need to get to the Citadel." But I was woefully unprepared for the torrent of emotions that racked my body. I clung to her as if she alone kept me from drowning. From a distance, I heard Bavol Kakao,
"Everyone get back to work. The fourth magician is our guest. We need a proper feast for tonight. Petal, make up the guest rooms. We'll need 5 beds.
The buzz of voices filling the common area dispersed. The room was almost empty when the woman, my mother, released me from her arms. It was still difficult to match her oval face to the title of mother. After all, she might not be my real mother. And if she were, did I have the right to call her by that name after so many years away? "Your father will be so pleased," she said. She pulled a strand of black hair from her face. Streaks of gray painted her long braids, and her pale green eyes shone with unshed tears. "How do you know?" I asked. "I may not be your..." "Your soul fits the void in my soul perfectly. I've no doubt you're mine. I hope you'll call me Mother. But if you can't, you can call me Pearl." I wiped at my face with the handkerchief Iris handed me. Glancing around, I looked for my father. "Father." Another word that threatened to ruin what little dignity I had remaining. "Your father's out collecting samples," Pearl said, seeming to read my mind. "He'll be back as soon as word reaches him." Pearl turned her head. I followed her gaze and saw Leif standing near us, his arms crossed over his chest and his hands bunched into fists. "You've met your brother. Don't just stand there, Leif. Come give your sister a proper greeting."
"I can't stand the smell," he said.
He turned his back on us and stalked away.
"Don't mind him," my mother said. "He's overly sensitive. He had trouble dealing with your disappearance. He was blessed with strong magic, but his magic is..." She paused. "Unique. He can sense where and what a person has been doing. Not specifics, but general feelings. The council calls on him to help solve crimes and disputes, and to determine if a person is guilty or not."
She shook her head.
"Those Zoltanas with magical powers have unusual abilities. What about you, Yelena? I feel the magic coursing through you."
A brief smile touched her lips. "My own limited ability.
What is your talent?"
I glanced at Iris for help.
"Her magic was forced from her and was uncontrolled until recently. We have yet to determine her specialty."
Color drained from my mother's face.
"Forced?"
I touched her sleeve. "It's all right." Pearl bit her lip.
"Could she flame out?" she asked Iris.
"No. I have taken her under my wing. She has gained some measure of control. Although she must come to the magician's keep so I can teach her more about her magic."
My mother grabbed my arms hard.
You must tell me everything that has happened to you since you were taken from us.
A trapped feeling seized my throat. Bavol Kakao stepped to my rescue.
The Zeltanas are honored that you have chosen one of ours as your student, Fourth Magician. Please let me escort your party to your room so you may freshen up and rest before the feast.
Relief coursed through me, although the determined set to my mother's jaw warned that she was not yet finished with me. Her grip tightened when Iris and the three girls moved to follow Bavol Kakao to our rooms.
Pearl, you'll have plenty of time to spend with your daughter, he said. She's home now.
She released me, stepping back.
I'll see you tonight. I'll ask your cousin, Nutty, to lend you some decent clothes for the feast.
I grinned as we worked our way to the guest rooms. With all that had happened today, my mother had still managed to notice the clothes I wore. The feast that night began as a sedate dinner, but then transformed into a party despite the fact that I might have offended my hosts by first tasting the many fruit dishes and seasoned cold meats for poisons before I ate. Old habits die hard. The night air filled with the scent of burning citronella mixed with a damp, earthy smell. After the meal, various Zeltanas pulled out musical instruments made of bamboo and twine. Some jumped up to dance, and others sang with the music. All the while, petite furry Valmers swung from the ceiling rafters and hopped from table to table. Some of my cousins had made pets of them. Splashes of black and white and orange and brown sat on their shoulders and heads. Other Valmers tumbled in the corners or stole food from the tables. May and the twins were delighted with the animals' long-tailed antics. Grisina tried to tempt a little tan and gold Valmer to eat from her hand. My mother sat next to me. Leif hadn't come to the feast. I wore a bright yellow and purple lily-patterned dress that Nutty had loaned me. The only reason I wore the obnoxious thing was to please Pearl. I thanked fate that Ari and Janko, my soldier friends from Ixia, weren't here. They would be rolling with laughter to see me wearing such a gaudy outfit. But oh, how I miss them. I changed my mind, wishing they were here. It would be worth the embarrassment just to see the glint in Janko's eyes.
We need to leave in a few days, Iris said to Bavol over the din of voices and music.
Her comment caused a mood-dampening ripple in those around us.
Why do you have to leave so soon? My mother asked.
Dismay creased her eyebrows tight together.
I need to get the other girls home, and I've been away from the Citadel and the Keep for too long.
The tired sadness in Iris's voice reminded me that she hadn't seen her family for nearly a year. Hiding and spying in the territory of Ixia had drained her. Our table was quiet for a while. Then my mother brightened.
You can leave Yelena here while you take the girls home.
It will be out of her way to come back for Yelena, Bavol Kakao said.
Mother frowned at him.
I could see her thoughts whirling behind her eyes. Aha! Leif can take Yelena to the Citadel. He has business with the first magician in 2 weeks.
Emotions rolled through my chest. I wanted to stay, but I feared being separated from Iris. They were my family, yet they were strangers. I couldn't help being wary. It was a skill learned in Ixia.
And traveling with Leif seemed as unpalatable as drinking a wine laced with poison.
Before anyone could agree or disagree, Mother said,
Yes, that will do.
She ended all discussion on the matter. The next morning I had a small panic attack when Iris pulled on her backpack.
Don't leave me here alone, I pleaded.
You're not alone. I counted 35 cousins and a whole mess of aunts and uncles. She laughed. Besides, you should spend some time with your family. You need to learn not to distrust them. I'll meet you at the Magician's Keep. It's within the Citadel's walls. In the meantime, keep practicing your control.
Yes, sir.
May gave me a big hug.
Your family is so much fun. I hope my family lives in the trees, too, she said.
I smoothed her braids. I'll try to visit you sometime. Iris said,
May might be at the Citadel School this cooling season if she can access the power source.
That would be great, May cried out with delight. The twins both gave me a quick hug. Good luck, Grisina said with a grin. You're going to need it. I followed them down the rope ladder and into the cooler air of the jungle floor to say goodbye. Watching Iris and the girls fight their way through the tight trail, I kept my eyes on them until they were out of sight. In their absence, my body felt paper thin and in danger of being shredded by the light breeze. In order to delay my return to the treetops, I studied my surroundings. The jungle's canopy above showed no evidence of the Zoltana dwellings, and the thick vegetation all around prevented me from seeing too far in any direction. Even with the loud clamor of insects, I could hear the faint sound of water rushing and lapping nearby. But I couldn't push past the growth to find the source. Frustrated, sweaty, and tired of being a meal for every mosquito, I gave up and climbed the rope ladder. Back in the warm and dry forest canopy, and among the labyrinth of rooms, I quickly became lost. Unrecognizable faces nodded or smiled at me. Others frowned and turned away. I had no idea where my room was or what I was supposed to be doing, and I didn't want to ask. The thought of telling my mother my life story was unappealing. Inevitable, I knew, but too much to bear at this moment. It had taken me almost a year to trust Valak with my history. How could I divulge my struggles to someone I'd just met? So I wandered here and there, searching for a view of the river I had heard on the jungle floor. Large expanses of green filled every vista. Several times, I spotted the gray smoothness of a mountainside. Iris had told me the Ilias jungle grew in a deep valley. Tucked into the crooks of the Davian Plateau's edge, the odd-shaped jungle was below the plateau's rim, leaving only one side open for travelers.
Very defensible, Iris had said. It's impossible to scale the walls to reach the plateau.
I was fooling around and testing my balance on a rope bridge when a voice startled me, and I had to grab the handrail.
What?
I tried to reestablish my footing.
I said, what are you doing?
Nutty stood at the end of the bridge. Sweeping an arm out, I said, taking in the view? I could tell by her dubious expression that I hadn't convinced her.
Follow me if you want to see a real view.
Nutty bounded away. I scrambled to keep up with her as she took shortcuts through the tree branches. Her thin arms and legs reached and grabbed vines with such flexibility that she reminded me of a Valmer. When she entered a spot of sunlight, her maple-colored hair and skin glowed. I had to admit there was one good thing about staying in the South. Instead of being the only person with tan skin, I finally looked as if I belonged. Living in the North with the pale-skinned Ixians for so long, though, had not prepared me for such a variety of brown skin tones. Much to my embarrassment, I had found myself gawking at the deeper mahogany skin colors when we had first entered Citia. Nutty stopped suddenly, and I almost knocked into her. We stood on a square platform in the tallest tree in the jungle. Nothing blocked the view. An emerald carpet stretched out below us, ending at two sheer rock faces that angled toward each other. Where the two cliffs joined, a vast waterfall poured forth, ending in a cloud of mist. Beyond the top edge of the rock cliffs, I saw a flat expanse. A mixture of tans, yellows, golds, and browns painted the smooth landscape.
Is that the Davian Plateau? I asked.
Yep. Nothing lives there but wild prairie grass. They don't get a lot of rain. Beautiful, huh?
An understatement.
Nutty nodded, and we stood for a while in silence. Finally, my curiosity broke the lull in conversation. I asked Nutty questions about the jungle, and eventually wove the conversation around to the Zoltana family.
Why do they call you Nutty? I asked.
She shrugged.
My real name is Hazelnut Palm Zoltana, but everybody's called me Nutty since I was little.
So Palm is your middle name?
No.
Nutty swung down over the edge of the platform and into the tree branches that supported it. The leaves shook, and after a moment, she climbed back. She handed me a group of brown nuts.
Palm, as in palm tree, is my family's name. Zaltana is the clan name. Everyone who marries us has to take that name, but within the clan there are different families. Here, crack them like this.
Nutty took one of the nuts and banged it on a nearby branch, revealing an inner nib.
Your family is Liana, which means vine. Yelena means shining one. Everyone is either named after something in the jungle, or their name means something in the old Ilias language, which we're forced to learn.
Nutty rolled her eyes in exasperation.
You're lucky you missed that. She poked me with a finger. And you missed having to deal with obnoxious older brothers, too. I once got into trouble for tying mine up in a vine and leaving him hanging. Oh, snake spit. I forgot. Come on.
She hurried back through the trees.
Forgot what? I asked, scrambling after her. I was supposed to take you to your mother. She's been looking for you all morning.
Nutty slowed only slightly to negotiate a rope bridge.
Uncle Esau's back from expedition.
Another family member to meet. I considered accidentally losing her. But remembering the hostile glares that I had received from some of my cousins, I stayed with Nutty. When I caught up to her, I grabbed her arm.
Wait, I panted. I want to know why so many Zaltanas frown at me. Is it the blood smell? No. Everyone knows Leaf can see gloom and doom in everything. He's always looking for attention.
She gestured at me.
Most of them think you're not really a Zaltana, but a spy from Ixia.
Chapter 3. You're joking, right? I asked. They don't really believe I'm a spy. Nutty nodded. Her ponytails, one on each side of her head, bobbed in contrast to her serious face.
That's the gossip, although no one would dare breathe a word of that to Aunt Pearl or Uncle Esau.
Why would they think such a thing? Her light brown eyes widened as if she couldn't believe my stupidity.
Look at your clothes.
She gestured at my black pants and white shirt.
We all know Northerners are forced to wear uniforms. They say if you were truly from the South, you wouldn't want to wear pants ever again.
I glanced at Nutty's orange skirt. The hem was tucked up into her brown fur belt, and she wore a pair of short yellow pants underneath.
Ignoring my stare, she said, "And you carry a weapon."
That much was true. I had my bow with me in case I found a place to practice. But so far, the only space big enough had been the common room, and that was always too crowded. Now was probably not the best time to tell Nutty about the switchblade strapped to my thigh.
"Who's been saying these things?" I asked.
She shrugged.
"Different people."
I waited. The silence drove the information out of her.
"Leaf's telling everyone that you don't feel right to him. He says he would know his own sister."
She fidgeted with her sleeve, rolling up the bright cotton fabric.
"Sishins are always worried that the commander will attack us someday, and we think northern spies are gathering information on our ability to defend ourselves. Even though Leaf tends to overreact, his magic is strong, so almost everyone believes you're a spy."
"What do you think?"
"I don't know. I was going to wait and see."
She looked down at her bare feet. They were tanned and calloused.
Another reason I stood out among the Zaltanas. I still wore my leather boots.
"That's very smart," I said.
"Do you think so?"
"Yes." Nutty smiled. Her light brown eyes lit up. I noticed a sprinkle of freckles across her small nose. She continued to lead the way to my mother. As I followed, I thought about the accusations that I was an Ixian spy. I wasn't a spy, but I couldn't say that I was a true Southerner either. And I wasn't sure I wanted to be called a Sishin. My reasons for being in the South were twofold, to avoid being executed and to learn how to use my magic. Meeting my family had been a bonus, and I wasn't going to let some petty rumors ruin my time here. I decided to ignore any more sidelong glances for now. There was no ignoring my mother's fury, though, when Nutty and I reached her residence. Every muscle in her thin arms and long neck were pulled taut. Waves of unspoken anger pulsed from the petite woman.
"Where have you been?" she demanded.
"Well, I saw Iris off, and then..." The explanation seemed weak in the face of her outrage, so I stopped.
"You've been gone from me for 14 years, and we have only 2 weeks together before you go again.
How could you be so selfish?
Without warning, she crumpled into a chair as if all her energy had been pulled from her.
I'm sorry, I started. No, I'm sorry, she said. It's just that your speech and manners are so foreign, and your father's back and anxious to see you. Leif's been driving me crazy, and I don't want my daughter to leave here feeling like she's still a stranger.
I hugged myself, feeling guilty and inadequate. She was asking for a great deal. I was sure to fail her in some way.
Your father wanted to wake you in the middle of the night. I made him wait, and he's been searching the homestead all morning, Pearl explained. I finally sent him upstairs with something to do.
She swung her arms wide.
You'll have to forgive us if we go too fast for you. Your arrival was so unexpected, and I should have insisted you stay with us last night, but Iris warned us not to smother you.
She took a deep breath.
But it's killing me. All I want to do is wrap you in my arms.
Instead, her arms dropped into her lap, resting on the blue and white fabric of her sleeveless dress. I couldn't reply. Iris had been right. I needed time before I would feel comfortable with the whole family dynamic, but I could also empathize with my mother. Each day, I missed Valak more than the day before. Losing a child had to be much worse. Standing by the door, Nutty pulled at her ponytails. My mother seemed to realize she was there.
Nutty, can you fetch Yelena's things from the guest quarters and bring them here?
Sure thing, Aunt Pearl. I'll have them here faster than a Karari bat can paralyze a Valmer.
In a flash of orange, Nutty was gone.
You can stay in our extra room.
My mother pressed her hand to her throat.
It's your room, actually.
My room. It sounded so normal. I had never had a place of my own before. I tried to imagine how I might have decorated it and made it my own, but I came up with a blank. My life in Ixia hadn't included special items such as toys, gifts, or art. I stifled a bark of laughter. My only private room had been my dungeon cell. Pearl jumped from her seat.
Yelena, please sit down. I'll get us some lunch. You have no meat on your bones.
As she hurried away, she called toward the ceiling.
Esau, Yelena's here. Come down for tea.
Alone, I glanced around the sitting area. The warm air smelled faintly of apples. The couch and two armchairs appeared to be made from ropes woven together, yet they were hard to the touch. The furniture was unlike the other Zaltana chairs I had seen, which were constructed with branches and sticks tied together. I settled into an armchair. The red leaf-patterned cushions crunched under my weight, and I wondered what had been stuffed inside them. My gaze lingered on a black wooden bowl on a small glass-topped table in front of the couch. The bowl looked to be hand-carved. I tried to relax, which worked until I saw a long counter against the back wall. Stretching across the length of the countertop was a series of odd-shaped bottles connected by loops of tubes. Unlit candles sat under some of the containers. The configuration reminded me of Rayad's lab. The memory of his collection of glass jars and metal instruments unnerved me. Visions of being chained to a bed while Rayad searched for the perfect torture device caused sweat to roll down my neck and my heart to squeeze. I berated myself for my overactive imagination. It was ridiculous that a similar contraption could make me recoil after 2 years. I forced myself closer. Amber liquid pooled in a few bottles. I picked up one and swirled the contents. A strong apple scent filled my nose. The memory of swinging and laughter floated into my mind. The image disappeared when I focused on it. Frustrated, I set the bottle down. The shelves behind the table were lined with rows of more bottles. The contraption looked like a still for making alcohol. Perhaps the liquid was an apple brandy like General Rasmussen's of Military District 7 in Ixia. I heard my mother return and turned around. She held a tray full of cut fruit, berries, and some tea. Placing the lunch on the small table before the couch, she gestured for me to join her.
Found my distillery, I see, she said, as if every Zaltana had one in their living room. Smell anything familiar?
Brandy, I guessed. Her shoulders drooped just a bit, but her smile didn't waver.
Try again.
Putting my nose over one of the amber-filled bottles, I inhaled.
The scent blanketed me in feelings of comfort and safety. It also choked and smothered. Memories of bouncing mixed with the image of lying on my back, clawing at my throat. I suddenly felt lightheaded.
Yelena, sit down.
My mother's hand was on my elbow, guiding me to a chair.
You shouldn't have breathed in so deeply. It's very concentrated.
She kept her hand on my shoulder.
What is it? I asked. My appleberry perfume.
Perfume?
You don't remember.
This time her disappointment showed as her smile faded from her lips.
I wore it all the time when you were a child. It's my best-selling perfume, very popular with the magicians at the keep. When you disappeared, I couldn't wear it anymore.
Her hand touched her throat again, as if she were trying to block either her words or emotions. With the word magicians, my windpipe tightened. The scene of my brief abduction at the fire festival the previous year played in my mind. The tents, the darkness, and the smell of appleberry mixed with the taste of ashes and the image of Iris ordering four men to strangle me to death.
Does Iris wear your perfumes? I asked.
Oh, yes. Appleberry is her favorite. In fact, she asked me last night to make her more. Does the scent remind you of her?
She must have worn it the first time we met, I said, choosing not to say more. If it hadn't been for Valak's timely arrival, Iris would have succeeded in killing me. It was ironic how both my relationships with Iris and Valak began badly.
I have found that certain smells are linked to specific memories. It's something Leif and I have been working on as part of his project with First Magician. We've created a variety of scents and odors that we use to help victims of crime remember. These memories are very powerful, and they help Leif get a clearer picture of what happened to them.
She moved away from me. Sitting down, she spooned fruit into three bowls.
I had hoped the appleberry would trigger your memories of us. I did get something, but...
I stopped, unable to put the brief impressions into words. I quelled my growing aggravation at being unable to recall anything from my 6 years of living here. Instead, I asked, "Do you make many perfumes?"
"Oh, yes," she said. "Esau brings me wonderful flowers and plants to use. I enjoy making new perfumes and scents."
"And she's the best in the land," a booming male voice said behind me.
I turned to see a small, stout man enter the room. His resemblance to Leif was unmistakable.
"Her perfumes have been worn by master magicians, as well as the queen and princess of Ixia when they were alive," Esau boasted.
He grabbed my wrists and pulled me upright.
"Yelena, my child, look how you've grown."
He squeezed me in a bear hug that lasted several seconds.
A strong odor of earth filled my nose.
He released me, sat down with a bowl of fruit in his lap and a cup of tea in his hand before I could react. Pearl handed me the other bowl as I resumed my seat. Esau's uncombed gray hair fell to his shoulders. As he ate, I saw that the lines on his hands were stained dark green.
"Esau, have you been playing with that leaf oil again?" Pearl asked. "No wonder you took so long to come down. Trying to scrub it off so you wouldn't smear it everywhere."
I could tell by the way he ducked his head without responding that this was an old argument. Esau stared at me in silence, squinting and cocking his head from side to side as if deciding on something. His complexion resembled tea without the milk. Deep lines etched his forehead and fanned out from his eyes. He had a kind face, used to laughing and crying.
"Now I want a report on what you've been doing all these years," Esau said.
I suppressed a sigh. No more chances to avoid it. Used to obeying orders in the north, I told them about growing up in General Brazel's orphanage in Military District 5. I glossed over the unpleasant years when I had reached maturity and had become Rayad and Mogkin's laboratory rat. My parents were distressed enough just hearing about their plans to use their kidnapped victim's magical power to help Brazel overthrow the commander. I saw no reason to tell them the brutal details of how they had erased the southern children's minds. When I mentioned becoming Commander Ambrose's food taster, I failed to tell them that I had been in the commander's dungeon awaiting execution for killing Rayad. And after I had spent a year there, I had been given the choice of the noose or the poison taster's position.
"I bet you were their best taster," my father said.
What a terrible thing to say, Pearl admonished. What if she were poisoned?
We Lianas have a great sense of smell and taste. The girl's here and safe, Pearl. If she wasn't good at detecting poisons, I doubt she would have lasted this long.
It's not like someone was trying to poison the commander all the time, I said. Only once, really. Pearl's hand flew to her neck. Oh, my. I bet it was his pet assassin that tried to poison him. That loathsome creature.
I stared at her, uncomprehending.
You know his spy, Valak? Every Sishan would love to see that man's head on a pike. He murdered almost the entire royal family. Only one nephew survived. Without Valak, that usurper would have never gained power and upset Sitya's good relationship with Ixia. And those poor northern children who are born with magic, slaughtered by Valak in their cribs.
While she shuddered with revulsion, I gaped. My fingers sought the chain around my neck and found the butterfly pendant Valak had carved for me. I squeezed it. Guess I wouldn't be telling her about my relationship with him. And I decided not to enlighten her about the commander's policy on Ixians discovered with magical abilities. Not as gruesome as killing babies, but usually ending in death for the unfortunate man or woman. Valak had not been a fan of that policy, but he wouldn't disobey an order from the commander. Perhaps, in time, Valak would help the commander see the benefits of having magicians on his staff. Valak isn't as horrible as you think, I said, trying to redeem his reputation. He was instrumental in uncovering Brazel and Mogkin's plans. In fact, he helped to stop them.
I wanted to add, he saved my life twice, but the twin grimaces of loathing on my parents' faces stopped me.
So much for my effort. He was the villain of Sitya, and it would take more than words to change his status. I couldn't say I blamed my parents.
When I had first met Valak, I feared his reputation, having no clue about the fierce loyalty, sense of fairness, and willingness to sacrifice himself for others that lurked beneath his reputation.
I thanked fate when Nutty barged in with my backpack swinging from her hands.
Esau took it from her.
Thanks, Nut, he said, tugging one of her ponytails.
Welcome, Saw.
She punched him lightly in the stomach, and then danced out of reach as he swung to grab her.
Sticking her tongue out at him, she skipped toward the door. Next time, Nut, I'm going to crack you.
Her laugh echoed.
You can try.
And she was gone.
Let me show you to your room, Esau said to me.
As I turned to follow him, Pearl said, Yelena, wait. Tell me what happened to Brazel's plans.
Thwarted. He's in the commander's dungeon.
And Rayad and Mogkin? I took a breath. Dead.
I waited for her to ask me who had killed them, and I wondered if I would tell her about my role in both of their deaths. She nodded with satisfaction.
Good. Esau and Pearl's living quarters had two floors, and instead of a ladder or staircase to connect them, Esau used what he called a lift. I had never seen anything like it before. We stood in a closet-sized room. Two thick ropes went through holes in the floor and ceiling.
Esau pulled on one of the ropes, and the wooden room rose. I put my hand on the wall, but the motion was smooth.
Eventually, we ascended to the second floor.
Esau poked his head back into the lift when I failed to follow him out. Like it? He asked.
It's great.
One of my designs. Pulleys are the key, he explained. You won't find many in the Zoltana homestead. The others are slow to change, but I've sold a ton at the market.
Does Pearl sell her perfumes at the market as well? I asked as I stepped onto the landing.
Yep. Most of the Zoltanas either sell or exchange goods at the Ilias market. It's open all year. My inventions and Pearl's perfumes have provided us with a plentiful source of income.
Esau talked as we walked down the hallway.
A group of Zoltanas will make a trip to the market when enough items have been made, or when a special order's due. We aren't the only ones who sell there either, so if we want something, we'll go and buy. Unfortunately, not everything we need can be found in the jungle. Like your mother's glass bottles and the hardware for my chairs.
You designed the rope furniture, too?
Yep. Except they're not ropes. They're lianas.
When understanding failed to brighten my face, he explained,
"Vines from the jungle."
Oh.
The lianas are a constant source of trouble. Probably why they're our family name.
Esau grinned.
They grow everywhere, and they can pull trees over. We have to keep them trimmed or cut them down. One day, instead of burning them, I took a bunch home and tried working with them.
Esau pulled back a cotton curtain that covered an entrance on the right side of the hallway. He gestured for me to precede him into a room.
The vines become very strong when dried.
While they're pliable, they can be woven into almost anything. At first, I thought we had entered a storeroom. The air held a slight musty odor, and rows of shelves holding glass containers of every size obscured the walls. The bottles were filled with various tinted substances. Only when I pulled my gaze away from the colorful collection did I see a small bed made from lianas and a wooden bureau. Esau ducked his head. He ran a green-stained hand through his hair.
Sorry. I've been using this room to store my samples, but I cleaned off the bed and desk this morning.
He pointed to a black wood desk tucked into a corner. It's fine, I said, trying to mask my disappointment. I had been hoping that this room would help me remember something, anything of my life before Brazil's orphanage. Laying my backpack on the bed, I asked, what other rooms are up here?
Our bedroom and my workroom. Come on, I'll show you.
We continued down the hall. There was another curtained doorway on the left, which led to a big bedroom. This room had a large bed with a purple-flowered quilt, two end tables, and shelves filled with books instead of containers. Esau pointed to the ceiling, which was made of leather hides stretched over branches.
I coated it with oil so the rain runs off, he explained. No water drips in here. But it does get hot.
Hanging from the middle of the ceiling was a large, flower-shaped fixture made of wood planks. Ropes wrapped around the base, crossed the ceiling, and trailed down the walls. What's that? I asked.
He smiled. Another invention. Pulleys again and some weights make the flower spin, cooling the room.
We went out into the hallway. Across from Esau's bedroom was another bedroom. A plain single bed, dresser, and nightstand were neatly arranged inside. No decorations, inventions, or other signs of its occupant were evident.
Leif lives at the magician's keep most of the year, Esau said, so I added his room to my work area.
We continued down the hall, which ended in a spacious room.
I grinned as I looked around.
Esau's workroom was stuffed full with plants, containers, piles of leaves, and tools. Shelves groaned under the weight of many jars filled with strange items and various liquids. Walking into the room without bumping a shin seemed impossible. The clutter reminded me of Valak's office and apartment. While Valak had books, papers, and rocks piled everywhere, Esau had invited the jungle to reside with him. I stood in the doorway for a moment.
Come in, come in. He walked past me. I want to show you something.
Taking my time, I threaded my way toward him. What do you do here?
This and that, he said as he searched through a pile of papers on a table. I like to collect samples from the jungle and see what I can cook up. Found some medicines, found some foods, flowers for your mother. Aha!
He held up a white notebook.
Here.
I took the book, but my attention was on the room as I searched for something familiar. The words, my mother, had triggered the feeling of doubt that had plagued me since my arrival at the Zoltana homestead. Finally, I asked Esau the same question I had asked Pearl. How do you know I'm your daughter? You seem so certain.
Esau smiled. Look in that book.
I opened the cover. On the first page was a charcoal drawing of a baby.
Keep turning.
The next page had a drawing of a small child. As I turned the pages, the girl grew from a child to an adolescent and to someone I recognized. Me. A hard knot gripped my throat as tears threatened to gush from my eyes. My father had loved me even when I was gone, and I couldn't even remember anything from my time here. The picture showed my childhood as it should have been, living here with Esau and Pearl.
It's really fun to flip through the book fast. Watch yourself grow 20 years in a few seconds.
Esau took the sketchbook from my hands and held it open.
See? This is how I know you're mine. I drew your picture every year after your birth, and even after you disappeared.
He turned to the last page and studied the portrait there.
I wasn't too far off. It's not perfect, but now that I've seen you, I can make corrections.
He tapped the book on his chest.
When you first disappeared, your mother carried this book with her, looking through the pictures all day long. Eventually, she stopped, but after a couple years, she saw me drawing another picture, and she asked me to destroy it.
Esau handed the book to me.
I told her she would never see it again. As far as I know, she hasn't. So let's keep it between us for now, okay?
Sure. I gave each page my full attention. This is wonderful. All doubts of my lineage vanished as I took note of the details that my father had put into these pictures. In that moment, I knew I was part of the Zoltana clan. A feeling of relief washed through me. I vowed to try harder to make a connection with my parents. Leaf, though, was another story.
You should show your sketchbook to Leaf, I said, giving the book back to Esau. Maybe then he would believe I'm his sister.
Don't worry about Leaf. He doesn't need to see a picture. He knows who you are. It's the shock of your arrival that's thrown him off balance. He had a difficult time with your disappearance.
Oh, yes. I forgot. I've had it so easy in the North. Esau grimaced, and I regretted my sarcasm.
Leif was with you the day you were taken from us, he said in a quiet voice. You had begged him to take you down to play on the jungle floor. He was 8, which may sound young, but Zoltana children are taught to survive in the jungle as soon as they can walk. Nutty was climbing trees before she took her first steps. It drove my sister crazy.
Esau sat in one of his vine chairs, and weariness seemed to settle on him like a coating of dust.
When Leif came home without you, our concern was minimal. A lost child had always been found within an hour or two. After all, the Ilias jungle isn't that big. Predators are not as active during the daytime, and at night we have a few tricks to keep them from our homestead. But we grew more frantic as the day wore on, and we still hadn't located you. You had disappeared so completely that everyone thought you had been caught by a necklace snake or a tree leopard.
Necklace snake?
He grinned, and an appreciative glint flashed in his eyes. A green and brown predator that lives in the trees. Sometimes 50 feet long, it loops its body over the branches, blending in with the jungle. When its prey comes close, it wraps itself around the victim's neck and squeezes.
Esau demonstrated with his hands.
Then it swallows the body whole and feeds on the carcass for weeks.
Not pleasant.
No, and it's impossible to see what is inside the snake unless you kill them. But their hides are too thick for arrows, and it's suicide to get close to one. Same with the tree leopard. The cat drags its kill into its den, another unapproachable sight. In the end, only Leaf believed that you were still alive. He thought you might be hiding somewhere, playing a game. As the rest of us grieved, Leaf searched the jungle for you day after day.
When did he finally stop? I asked.
Yesterday.
Chapter 4. No wonder Leaf was so angry. 14 years spent searching, and I hadn't had the decency to let him find me. He alone had believed I was still alive. I regretted every harsh thought I had entertained about him. Until he showed up at the door to Esau's workroom.
Father, Leif said, ignoring me, tell that girl, if she wants to go to the Citadel, I'm leaving in 2 hours. Why so soon? Esau asked. You're not due for 2 weeks. Bavol has received a message from First Magician. Something has happened. I'm needed right away.
Leif's chest seemed to inflate with his own sense of importance. I suppressed the desire to jab him in his solar plexus and knock some of his ego out of him. When Leif turned on his heel and left, I asked Esau, Is there anyone else going to the Citadel in the next couple weeks? He shook his head.
It's a long journey, many days walk, and most Zoltanas prefer the jungle.
What about Bavol Kakao? Isn't he our councilman at the Citadel? Doesn't he have to be there? Iris had explained that the council consisted of the 4 master magicians, plus a representative from each of the 11 clans. Together, they ruled the southern lands.
No, the council disbands during the hot season.
Oh.
It was hard to believe they were just starting their hot season. Coming from Ixia during its cold season, the whole southern territory felt as if it were already scorching.
Can you give me directions? I asked.
Yelena, you'll be safer with Leaf. Come now, let's pack. 2 hours isn't...
Esau stopped and shot me a glance.
Is that backpack all you have?
And my bow.
Then you need some provisions.
Esau began to search his room. I don't... My words were cut short as he handed me a book. It was white like his sketchbook, but inside were drawings of plants and trees with written descriptions beneath. What's this? I asked.
A field guide. I plan to reteach you how to survive in the jungle, but this will have to do for now.
I found a page with an illustration of an oval-shaped leaf. The instructions below the picture explained that boiling the talipi leaf in water would make a draft that would reduce a fever. Next, Esau gave me a set of small bowls and some bizarre-looking utensils.
That guide is of little use without the proper equipment. Now let's find your mother.
He paused and sighed.
She is not going to be happy.
He was right. We found her working at her distillery and fussing at Leaf.
It's not my fault, Leaf said. If you want her to stay so badly, why don't you take her to the Citadel? Oh, that's right. You haven't set your precious little feet on the jungle floor in 14 years.
Pearl spun on Leaf with a bottle of perfume clenched in her hand, poised to throw.
He stepped back.
When she spotted Esau and me standing in the doorway, she went back to filling the bottle.
Tell that girl I'll be at the bottom of the palm ladder in 2 hours, Leaf said to Esau. If she's not there, I'm leaving without her.
When Leaf left the room, the silence continued to thicken.
You'll need some food, my father said, retreating into the kitchen.
Bottles clinking, my mother approached. Here, she said, 2 bottles of appleberry for Iris, and a bottle of lavender for you. Lavender? You loved it when you were 5, so I took a chance. We can experiment later and find something else if you'd like. I opened the cap and sniffed. Again, I experienced no memories of being 5, but the scent made me remember the time I had hidden under a table in Valak's office. I had been searching for the recipe to the antidote for butterfly's dust, the so-called poison in my body that had been Valak's way to keep me from escaping. Thinking I had needed a daily dose of the antidote to stay alive, I had been intent on finding the cure. Valak had come back early and discovered me because I had used lavender-scented soap. I still favored the scent. This is perfect, I said to Pearl. Thank you. Unexpected fear flared in Pearl's eyes. She clamped her lips and clasped her hands. Taking a deep breath, she declared, I'm coming with you. Esau, where's my pack? She asked him as he returned with an armload of food.
Upstairs in our room, he said.
She rushed past him. If he was surprised by her sudden decision, it didn't show in his expression. I added the bread and fruit he had brought to my pack, and I wrapped the perfume bottles in my cloak. During the journey south, my cloak had been too hot to wear, but it had made a soft place to sleep when we had camped along the road.
The food will only last so long, and you'll probably need more clothes while you're at the Citadel, Esau said. Do you have any money?
I fumbled in my pack. Needing money for food and clothes still seemed odd to me. In the north, we had been provided with all of our basic necessities. I pulled out the bag of Ixian gold coins that Valak had given to me before we parted. Showing one to Esau, I asked, Will these work?
Put that away.
He closed my hand around the coin.
Don't let anyone see that you have them. When you get to the Citadel, ask Iris to exchange them for Sishan money.
Why?
You might be mistaken for a northerner.
But I am.
You are not. Most southerners are suspicious of people from Ixia, even the political refugees. You are a Zoltana. Always remember that.
A Zoltana. I worked the name around my mind, wondering if just saying the name would make me one. Somehow I knew it wasn't going to be that easy.
Esau went over to a desk and rummaged through the drawers.
I put away Valak's money.
With my father's supplies and food, my pack bulged.
I made an attempt to organize the contents.
Would I need my rope and grapple? Or my northern uniform?
While I hoped that I wouldn't have cause to use them, I couldn't bring myself to part with them just yet. Metal rattled. Esau returned with a handful of silver coins.
It's all I could find, but it should be enough until you get to the Citadel. Now go up and say goodbye to your mother. It's getting late.
Isn't she coming with us?
No. You'll find her on the bed.
He said those words with a mixture of resignation and acceptance. I pondered his words as I pulled the lift up.
I found her curled up in a ball on top of the quilt in her bedroom.
Pearl's body shook as tears soaked into her pillow. Next time, she sobbed. Next time I'm going with Leaf to the Citadel. Next time. I would like that, I said.
Remembering Leaf's comment on how she hadn't left the jungle in so long, I added, I'll come home and see you as soon as I can.
Next time. I'm doing it next time.
Having decided to delay the trip to the Magician's Keep, Pearl calmed. Eventually she unfurled and stood, smoothing her dress and wiping tears from her cheeks.
Next time, you'll stay with us longer.
It sounded like an order.
Yes, Mother.
The creases of worry disappeared from her face, revealing her beauty. She hugged me tight and whispered,
I don't want to lose you again. Be very careful.
I will.
I meant it.
Some hard-learned habits couldn't be broken. There were only a few exits to the jungle floor. Each exit was named after a family whose residences were nearby. I reached the room that had the palm ladder.
Just as I swung a leg onto the first rung, I heard Nutty's voice.
I had already said goodbye to my parents and Bavol Kakao, but hadn't been able to find Nutty anywhere.
Yelena, wait, Nutty said.
I stopped, looking up in time to see her swinging through the door. She clutched a mass of colorful cloth in one fist.
I made these,
she paused to catch her breath.
For you.
The light yellow skirt, subdued by Zoltana standards, was printed with small buttercups, and the shirt was a solid coral color. I eyed the skirt with suspicion. Nutty laughed.
Look, she said, pulling the skirt apart. See? It looks like a skirt, but it's really pants. You'll be awfully hot in those black trousers when you cross the plains.
She held the waistband up to me as if judging the length.
And this way you won't stand out so much.
Clever girl, I said, smiling.
You like?
I like. She seemed pleased with herself.
I knew it.
Can you make me some more? Perhaps you can send them with Bavol when he comes?
Sure.
I removed my backpack and searched for some money.
How much?
Nutty shook her head.
When you get to the Ilias Market, buy some cloth from Fern's stand. Then have her send it to me. I'll need 3 yards for each set of clothes. I'll make you as many as you want.
But what about wages for your efforts?
Her ponytails flew as she swung her head no again.
Zoltanas do not charge family.
Although, her brown eyes glinted, if anyone should ask who designed your clothes, feel free to give them my name.
I will. Thanks.
I folded my new outfit and stuffed it into my backpack. Then Nutty hugged me goodbye. The warmth from her body clung to me as I climbed down the ladder. It lasted until the first cold sneer from Leaf drove it away. He waited for me on the jungle floor. Leaf had changed into traveling clothes that consisted of a tan cotton tunic, dark brown pants, and boots. He carried a large leather pack on his back and a machete hung from his thick belt.
Keep up or be left behind, he said to the air above my head. Turning his broad back to me, he took off at a brisk clip.
I knew I would soon tire of looking at his back, but for now, the pace he set was a welcome chance to stretch my legs.
Without another word uttered between us, we traveled on a narrow path through the jungle. Sweat soon soaked my shirt,
and I found myself glancing up in search of necklace snakes.
Esau had also mentioned tree leopards.
I decided I would search Esau's field guide for a picture of the predators when I had some time. Various birds sang and whistled, and animal cries echoed through the leafy canopy. I wanted to know the names of these creatures, but I guessed Leaf would ignore my questions.
He stopped once, taking a machete from his belt.
Without thought, I grabbed my bow.
Snorting in derision, he merely hacked at a small sapling. "Strangler fig," he huffed over his shoulder.
I made no reply. Should I be honored that he had finally chosen to talk to me?
Leaf didn't wait for a response. "A parasite. The strangler fig uses another tree to reach the sunlight. Once there, it grows bigger, eventually strangling and killing its host." He pulled the fig's branches away from the tree. "A process I'm sure you are very familiar with."
He tossed the plant onto the ground and marched on.
Not a lesson on jungle life, but a jab at me. I contemplated tripping him with my bow.
It would be a petty, mean-spirited thing to do.
Tempting, but I threaded my staff into its holder on my pack instead.
We arrived at the Ilias market just as the sun began to set. The collection of bamboo structures had thatched roofs and bamboo shades for walls. Some of the walls had been rolled up to allow customers to browse and the light breeze to cool.
Leaf and I had been walking downhill, and the trail ended at the market, which stood in a clearing at the edge of the jungle.
The mammoth trees of the tropical forest no longer dominated the landscape. Beyond the clearing, I could see woodland that looked similar to the snake forest in Ixia.
"We'll camp here tonight and leave at first light," Leaf said before heading toward one of the stands.
I had thought that with the setting of the sun, the market would close. Instead, a vast array of torches was lit, and business continued unabated. The sounds of bartering could be heard above the general buzz of 100 or so customers talking, calling to children, and hurrying from stand to stand carrying packages.
Some of the shoppers wore the familiar dress of the Zaltanas,
but I also saw a number wearing green leggings and tunics that were the dress of the forest-dwelling Cowan clan.
When we had traveled from Ixia, Iris had taught me to recognize the different clans by their clothing.
I also spotted a few women wearing the traditional shimmering silk pants, short beaded tops, and sheer veils of the Jewel Rose clan. The Jewel Rose men even sported beads and jewels on their long tunics that hung down to the knees of their pants.
When Iris had explained her clan's customs to me, I couldn't imagine Iris wearing anything but the simple linen shirt, pants, and wide belt that she always donned.
I wandered through the market, marveling at the variety of goods available for sale. Practical items like food and clothing sat side by side with jewelry and handcrafts. A pine scent from the torches dominated, but it didn't take long for me to discern the smell of roasting meat.
I followed the mouth-watering aroma to a fire pit.
A tall man covered with sweat spun the meat that sizzled in the flames. His white apron was streaked with soot.
I bought some hot beef from him to eat right away, and some smoked jerky for later.
Trying to ignore the pointed stares of the other shoppers, I searched the market for Fern's stand, vowing to change into Nutty's clothes as soon as I found some privacy.
Soon a table piled high with bolts of cloth attracted my attention.
As I looked through the prints, a small dark woman with large eyes peeked out from behind the collection.
"May I help you?" she asked.
"Are you Fern?"
Her eyes widened in alarm as she nodded.
"Nutty Zaltana sent me. Do you have any solid colors?" From underneath the table, Fern pulled bolts of plain cloth and added them to the table. Together, we matched up colors and patterns for 3 outfits.
"Are you sure you don't want this Ilias print?"
Fern held up a loud pink and yellow flowered pattern.
"Solid colors are usually worn by the Zaltana men. This print is very popular with the girls."
I shook my head. Just as I began to pay her for the cloth, I spotted a material that matched the colors of the forest.
"Some of this, too," I said, pointing to the green pattern.
When we had settled up, I asked her to send the fabric to Nutty, but I found room for the forest print in my pack.
"Who should I say is sending it?" Fern asked,
her quill poised above the parchment.
"Her cousin, Yelena." The quill froze in midair.
"Oh, my," she said. "The lost Zaltana child?"
I gave her a weary half-smile. Not lost, nor a child any longer. Strolling past a few more stands, I stopped at a table displaying statues of jungle creatures. They were constructed of small, multicolored stones glued together. I selected a black-and-white Valmer statue and bought it for Valak. Not quite sure how I would send it to him, I wrapped the gift in my new green fabric. Campfires began to blaze behind the market. Commerce slowed as the shop owners rolled the bamboo shades down, closing their stands. Customers either headed into the surrounding forest or toward one of the camps. I spotted Leaf seated next to one of the fires. He held a bowl in his lap while he talked to the three young Zoltana men seated near him. Through the shimmering air above the fire, I saw him smile and laugh. His whole face transformed in that instant. Scowl lines smoothed, cheeks lifted, erasing the impact of his serious face and softening his square jaw. He looked 10 years younger. Remembering that Esau had said Leif had been 8 when I was kidnapped, I realized now that my brother was only 2 years older than me. He was 22, instead of my original guess of 30. Without thought, I moved to join him. In a heartbeat, the merriment dropped from his face. He scowled with such fierceness that I stopped in my tracks. Where was I to sleep that night? Someone touched my shoulder. I spun.
"You're welcome to stay at my fire," Fern said.
She pointed to a small blaze behind her stand. "Are you sure? I might be a spy from Ixia." I tried to joke, but the words came out harsher than I had wanted.
"Then you can report to your commander that I make the finest cloth of all the clans. And if he wants a new uniform made from my famous Ilias print, just have him send me an order."
I laughed at the image of the impeccable Commander Ambrose, draped in gaudy hot pink and yellow flowers. As the first rays of sunlight touched the straw roofs of the market, I waited for Leif to continue our journey. Fern had been a kind host, treating me to dinner and showing me where I could change in private. As it turned out, Nutty was her best customer, supplying all the Zoltanas with clothes. I fidgeted in the warm morning air, trying to get used to the extra fabric around my legs. The hem just covered the tops of my soft leather boots. Fern had assured me that my boots would blend in better once I reached the Citadel. Only the jungle and forest clans preferred mud between their toes. Finally, Leif appeared. Refusing to acknowledge my presence, he started down a forest path. After a couple of hours, I grew tired of following him in silence. I pulled my bow and began executing blocks and jabs as I walked. I concentrated on the feel of the wood in my hands, setting my mind into that mental awareness that Iris had claimed was my way of tapping into the magical power source. To practice control of the magic, I projected my awareness out. At first, I encountered a cold stone wall. Confused, I retreated until I realized the barrier was Leif's mind, closed and unyielding. I shouldn't have been surprised. Skirting his presence, I sought the calm forest surrounding us. I crept with a chipmunk, looking for nuts. I froze with a young deer, hearing the sound of footsteps. My mind touched different creatures as I reached out. Gradually, I projected my awareness farther and farther away, seeing how far I could go. Behind me, I could still feel the people at the market, 5 or 6 miles away. Thrilled, I pushed ahead to see if a town was close by. At first, I touched only more animals, but just as I was about to pull back, my mind touched a man. Careful to avoid breaking the ethical code, I skimmed the surface of his mind. He was a hunter, waiting for prey, and he wasn't alone. There were many men around him. They crouched in the bushes just off the trail. One sat on a horse with his weapon poised for an attack. I wondered what they hunted. Curiosity made me dip a little deeper into the man's thoughts. An image of his prey appeared, snapping me back to my body. I stopped. I must have gasped, because Leif turned and stared at me.
"What are you doing?" he demanded.
"The forest. Men."
"Of course. The woods are full of game," he explained as if talking to a simpleton.
"Not hunters.
ambushers, waiting for us. Chapter 5.
Ambushers? Don't be ridiculous, Leaf said.
Amazement colored his voice.
You're not an Ixia anymore.
Why would a hunting party hide so close to the path? I asked, ignoring his tone and hoping that logic would prevail.
Animals use the forest trails. It's easier than fighting through the underbrush.
Leaf started to walk away.
Come on.
No. You're leading us into a trap.
Fine. I'll go without you.
When he turned his back again, I was gripped with rage.
Do you think I'm lying? The words growled from between my teeth. No. I think you're suspicious of everything and everyone, just like a northerner.
His mouth twisted as if he wanted to spit.
You think I'm a spy? I snapped at him in frustration. I'll lower my defenses. Project your mind out and see for yourself that I'm not here to spy on Citya. I can't read minds. In fact, no Zoltana can.
I ignored the jab. Can't you at least sense who I am?
Physically, you're a Zoltana. But just because Iris claims you survived Mogkin's efforts to wipe your mind doesn't mean it's true.
Leaf pointed an accusing finger at me.
You could be a pawn, an empty vessel that has been provided with a northern host. What better way to have eyes and ears in the south?
Ridiculous.
No, it's not. You've revealed yourself, Leaf said with a quiet intensity.
Then his eyes dulled and turned vacant as if he peered into another world.
I taste strong loyalty and longing for Ixia emanating from you. You stink of blood and pain and death. Anger and passion and fire buzz around you like a haze.
His gaze refocused on me.
My sister would be reveling in her freedom and wrapped with hatred for her captors. You have lost your soul to the north. You are not my sister. It would have been better if you had died than returned to us tainted.
I took a deep breath to calm the sudden fury that threatened to take control.
Wake up, Leaf! What you dreamed of finding in the jungle didn't factor in reality.
I'm not that innocent 6-year-old. I endured more than you can imagine and fought hard to keep my soul.
I shook my head. I was not going to explain myself to this stubborn fool. I know who I am. Perhaps you need to reevaluate your expectations of me.
We stood for a moment, glaring at each other. Finally, I said, "You're walking into an ambush."
I'm walking to the Citadel. Are you coming?
I weighed my options. If I used my grapple and rope to climb into the trees, I could travel through the forest canopy and move past the ambush while remaining near the trail.
But what about Leaf,
my brother, who acted like my enemy? He had his machete. Did he know how to use it in a fight? What if he were injured in the ambush?
It would be his own fault. We were brother and sister by blood alone, and I couldn't imagine Leaf and me ever being close.
Still, a pang of regret touched my heart.
Esau and Pearl wouldn't want to see Leaf hurt.
Then I realized Leaf was a magician. Could he defend himself with his magic? I shook my head. I didn't know enough about magic to even contemplate what could be done with it.
I would never have guessed a hunting party could frighten a northerner away. Leaf laughed as he set off down the trail.
That did it. I unslung my backpack and found my switchblade. Cutting a small slit along the outer seam of my new pants, I strapped the thigh holder to my leg.
I pulled apart my single braid and wrapped my hair up into a bun using my lockpicks to hold it in place. Now dressed for a fight, I slipped my pack over one shoulder and raced after Leaf. As I caught up with him, he gave me an amused grunt.
With my 5-foot bow in hand, I set my mind into my mental fighting zone. The zone was a concentration technique that allowed me to anticipate my opponent's moves as I fought.
This time I focused on the trail ahead.
The men were poised and ready, 6 on each side of the road. I knew the instant they heard us, but they waited.
They wanted to surround us, attacking only when we had walked into the middle of their group. I had other plans.
Just before we reached the ambush, I dropped my pack to the ground and called, "Wait up!"
Leaf spun around. "What now?"
"I think I heard some..." A shout filled the forest. Birds darted into the sky with a flurry of wings.
Men exploded from the bushes with their swords in hand. But the element of surprise was mine. I knocked aside the swords of the first two men who rushed me. Slamming my bow hard against their temples, I sent them to the ground. As a third man approached, I swept his feet out from under him. Two more men rushed me. I stepped up to engage them, but they jumped to the sides of the trail. My confusion lasted until I felt a deep rumbling through the soles of my boots. Looking up, I saw a broad-chested horse charging down the path toward me. I dove out of the way just as a flash of steel bit into my upper left arm. Furious, I attacked the man closest to me, jabbing my bow into his nose. Blood gushed as he cried out in pain.
"Stop her," the man on horseback ordered.
I searched for Leaf. He stood in the middle of the road, surrounded by four armed men. An astonished look creased his face, but otherwise he appeared unharmed. His machete lay at his feet. Outnumbered, I had only seconds left. The horseman had turned his steed around, preparing for another charge. The man with the broken nose lay on the ground. I stood on his chest and threatened his neck with the end of my bow.
"Stop, or I'll crush his windpipe," I yelled.
The young man halted his horse. But as the others backed away, staring at me in disbelief, he raised his sword into the air.
"Surrender, or I'll kill your brother," he said.
How did he know Leaf was my brother? I looked at Leaf, considering. The point of a guard's sword balanced mere inches from Leaf's heart. Fear had bleached my brother's face. Served him right. The soldier under my feet wheezed. I shrugged. "Seems we're at an impasse," I said to the horseman.
"Indeed."
He paused.
"What say we stand down and discuss the situation?"
I began to agree when the rider snapped his fingers. I sensed movement, but before I could swing around, I heard a horrible thud, felt a crushing pain at the base of my skull. Then nothing. My head pulsed with pain as if someone were beating two mallets on the sides of my skull. I opened my eyes for a second, but squeezed them shut again. Bobbing brown hide filled my view, causing nausea. As I fought to keep the contents of my stomach in place, I realized I had been hung upside down and was being moved. I risked another peek and confirmed my suspicion that I had been thrown over the back of a horse. I vomited.
"She's awake," said a male voice.
Thank fate, the horse stopped.
"Good. We'll stop and make camp here," said the horseman.
I felt a hard push in my side, and I dropped to the ground. A jolt shot through my body on impact. Stunned, all I could do was hope nothing had been broken. As the sunlight faded, I heard the rustle of men working. When I tried to squirm into a more comfortable position, I started to panic. I couldn't move very well. Then I recognized the familiar stomach-clenching sound of manacles clamped on my wrists and ankles. Upon inspection, I noticed a foot-long chain hanging between the metal cuffs on my wrists. It took a considerable effort not to scream and flail at my restraints. A few deep breaths calmed my speeding heart and frantic mind. I assessed the damage to my body. Aside from some bruised muscles, I couldn't feel any broken bones, although my upper left arm burned from the sword cut. I hadn't noticed the pain during the fight, and even now, it seemed a mere nuisance compared to the pounding in my skull. So I lay still and bided my time. By full dark, the noises of setting up the camp had been replaced by the quiet murmur of voices. When the pain in my head died down to a dull ache, I tried to move again and succeeded in turning onto my back. My view of the stars was soon obscured by a man's face looking down at me. Small, close-set eyes peered around a many times broken nose. Moonlight glinted off his sword, allowing me to see that the tip hovered above my throat.
"Make trouble, and I'll skewer you with me blade," the man said with a sick smile. "And I'm not talking about me sword."
To prove his point, he sheathed his weapon. I decided not to make trouble, at least not yet. The guard seemed satisfied with my silence. He crossed his thick, muscled arms over his chest, staring at me. I could feel my switchblade holder on my thigh. Whether or not it still held my weapon was another matter, and I couldn't risk checking it while under guard.
Instead, I surveyed the area to get my bearings. My attackers had camped in a clearing. Men surrounded a bright fire, cooking something that smelled like meat. A single tent had been erected. Leaf and the horsemen were not in sight, but the horse was tied to a nearby tree. I counted 10 men in the clearing, including my guard. There might have been more inside the tent. Either way, too many for me to fight. I tried to sit up. The world spun, and my stomach heaved until there was nothing left inside. A guard came toward me from the campfire. He was an older man with short gray hairs bristling from his scalp. He held a cup in his hand, which he handed to me.
"Drink this," he ordered.
The warm scent of ginger floated from the liquid.
"What is it?"
My voice rasped.
"It doesn't matter."
My guard took a step closer to me, raising his fist.
"You do what Captain Marek says." "Easy, Goal. She has to be able to walk tomorrow," Captain Marek said.
Then to me,
"Your brother made it from some leaves he had in his pack."
Leaf was alive. My relief surprised me.
"It's to make your head feel better," the captain said when my lips hesitated on the rim of the cup.
A hint of kindness touched his blue-gray eyes, but he didn't let the feeling alter his stern expression. Why poison me now when they could have killed me before? Perhaps Leaf wanted me dead?
"Drink it, or I'll force it down your throat," Goal said.
I believed Goal, so I took a small sip, testing for poisons. It tasted like sweet ginger mixed with lemon juice. Feeling a little better from the one taste, I gulped the rest.
"Cahill said to move her closer to the fire. It's too dark back here. I've assigned 4-hour buddy shifts for tonight," Captain Marek said.
Goal grabbed me under the arms and pulled me to my feet. Preparing for another round of nausea, I braced myself, but nothing happened. My stomach settled, and my head cleared enough for me to wonder how I was supposed to walk with such a short chain between my manacled ankles. At least my wrists and ankles weren't connected together. The problem was solved when Goal lifted me over his shoulder. When he dropped me near the fire, the other men ceased their conversation. One man glared at me above the bloody bandage that he held to his nose. Marek gave me a plate of food.
"Eat. You'll need your strength."
The guards all laughed. It was a humorless, frightening sound. I debated whether or not to eat the meat and cheese bread. It had been only a few minutes since I had emptied my stomach on the ground, but the inviting smell of grilled meat made the decision for me. After tasting for poisons, I gobbled the meal. With my headache gone and my body somewhat revived from the food, I contemplated my situation. My biggest question was why had Leaf and I been captured, and by whom? Goal still hovered nearby, so I asked him.
He backhanded me across my face.
"No talking," he ordered.
My cheek stung as unbidden tears welled. I hated this Goal. I spent the next hours in silence, using the time to search for a way to escape. My backpack wasn't anywhere in sight, but across the fire, a heavy-set man tried to spar another guard with my bow. Sweating with profusion, the big man inexpertly hacked at the other's practice sword and was beaten with ease. After watching the bout, I decided that these men had to be soldiers even though they wore plain homespun civilian clothes. Their ages ranged from mid-20s to late 40s, maybe even 50. Mercenaries, perhaps? Captain Marek's command of these men was obvious. So why had they attacked us? If they needed money, they could have taken what they wanted and been on their way. If they were killers, I would be dead by now. That left kidnapping. For a ransom? Or for something worse? A shudder shook my shoulders when I thought of my parents receiving word that I had disappeared again, and I promised myself that I wouldn't let it go that far. Somehow, I would escape, but I knew it wouldn't be under Goal's zealous watch. I rubbed my neck. My hand came away sticky with blood. Exploring with my fingertips, I found a deep gash at the base of my skull and a smaller cut above my left temple. I tapped my bun and moved my hand away with what I hoped was a casual motion. My lockpicks were still holding up some of my hair, and I prayed Goal didn't see them. A possible means of escape was within reach.
I just needed some time unguarded.
Unfortunately, it didn't look like that would happen any time soon. Two men came out of the tent and headed straight toward me.
He wants to see her, one man said as they hauled me to my feet.
They dragged me toward the tent. Goal followed. I was pulled inside and dumped on the floor. When my eyes adjusted to the dim candlelight, I saw the young horseman sitting at a canvas table.
Leaf, unchained and unharmed, sat beside him. My backpack was on the table, and my possessions had been spread out.
With effort, I stood. Friends of yours? I asked Leaf.
Something hard connected with the side of my head, slamming me back to the ground. Leaf half rose from his seat, but settled when the horseman touched his sleeve.